I call this meeting the Property Tax Division to order pursuant to Rule 10.01. The first order of business is that we need to take a roll call to determine who's present. The clerk, Mr. Peterson, will now take the roll.
Chair Joaquim?
Present.
Joaquim, present. Vice Chair Gomez? Vice Chair Gomez? Representative Hertas? Representative Hertas? Representative Anderson?
Anderson, here.
Anderson, present. Representative Becker Finn?
Becker Finn, present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, present.
Fisher, present. Representative Green?
Present.
Green, present. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan? Representative Herr? Representative Herr? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Mortensen is excused. Representative Pulowski? Representative Pulowski? Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Vice Chair Gomez?
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hertas? Representative Hassan?
Hassan is here.
Hassan, present. Representative Herr? I see Representative Hertas just joined.
Hertas here.
Hertas present. All right. There's a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from March 9th. Representative Marquardt, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and Madam Chair, I will move approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Marquardt moves the approval of the March 9th minutes. Anybody have any questions? Help if I put the participation bar up so I can see everybody's hands. All right. Seeing no questions, everybody on mute, this will be a voice vote. All those in favor of approving the March 9th minutes, say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. The motion is approved and the minutes are adopted. Members, as a reminder, there is a spreadsheet provided by fiscal staff in your packets that describes the revenue impact for all the bills that we're hearing today, as well as individual notes from the bills. Both the school levy equalization bills have fiscal notes, and the runs for your school districts are in those packets as well. So members, the next item on the agenda. Sorry about that. The next item on the agenda is House File 3224. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move House File 3224 before the division?
Madam Chair, I will move that House File.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Hewitt, welcome to the committee. Will you please present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3224 is about school levy equalization, lowering property tax and reducing education funding disparities. Through school levy equalization is a topic I and many of us have introduced bills over the years. It's our job as state legislators to fund public schools, and to the extent that property taxes are part of the school funding system, we should make sure they are implemented fairly across the district and class of property. The surplus gives us an opportunity to take advantage of the comprehensive look at the effectiveness of the school levy system. Because the equalization formula is based on the 1990s property value, I'm going to say that again, because it's based on the 1990s property value, the property tax relief has eroded over time. No taxpayer in the lower property wealth school districts can pay over three times more for their same levy dollar than taxpayers in higher property wealth districts. We like to say that the quality of a child's education shouldn't depend on their zip code. Members, this bill gives us a chance to deliver a meaningful way in a kind and way on that kind of talk. Earlier this session, I met with some of the school groups and we talked through a list of ideas to create more levy fairness across the state. House File 3224 provides property tax relief and makes the taxpayer cost for school levy dollars more uniform across the state, keeping the state in a steady partnership with local schools over time. Specifically, the bill increases the state aid portion through equalization for school levies in their operating referendum and location optional revenue, which provides optional revenue for schools, and also the debt service levy, which pays for the building bond. This bill, based on the property tax relief on state average property values, so the tax relief is permanent and ongoing. This bill also gives local school boards some modest revenue options for operations and facility maintenance fees. It closes some of the regional inequities that have existed for a long time. Madam Chair, I want to note a letter of support from pretty much every public organization, every public school organization in support of this bill. But I go further. I want to make sure that testifiers get a chance to weigh in. Madam Chair, I believe you have a list of our testifiers today.
Yes, I do, Representative Hugh. Thank you. Before we do that, I'm going to have our fiscal staff, Tim Strom, from Nonpartisan Fiscal, that covers education, go over the runs for this bill. As I said, members, the runs are in your packets. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for having me today. I'm Tim Strom from House Research, and I usually work on K-12 finance issues. In your packets today, in the landscape-oriented printout for House File 3224, you'll see each of the four programs whose levies are affected by the change in the equalization rate, and two of those four programs have an increase in revenue for the school districts as well. So there's two different effects in the bill. There's increasing revenue. Those columns marked local optional revenue increases by about $86 million, and the long-term facilities maintenance revenue increases by about $61 million. So the total revenue increase in this bill, that is additional money for districts to spend, is about $147 million. The districts are listed in ascending district number order. That keeps districts together by the counties. So as you're looking through the 330 school districts, they'll be ordered in essentially in county order because that's the order the school district numbers follow. The next parts of the printout show the four different areas where the school taxes are going down because of the higher equalization levels. And you can see there that the local optional revenue levy is going down by about $82 million statewide. The operating referendum levy, which is the voter approved levy, is going down by about $187 million. The debt service levy, which is the one used for repaying building bonds for school projects, construction projects, is going down by $46 million. And the long-term facilities maintenance levy actually increases a bit because of the revenue increase for some districts, because of the revenue increase in that formula. So the third to last column shows that total levy reduction statewide of $280 million. And then the last two columns portray the revenue increase and the levy reduction on a per-pupil basis. So in a nutshell, Madam Chair, that's the printout you're looking at in front of you. And after you finish testimony, if members have questions, I'm glad to address those questions for you.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What is the title to this document? I'm looking for it on the Property Tax Division website, and I can't find it.
It should be House File 3224 for fiscal year 24, increasing LOR, LTFM, and the referendum revenue.
Madam Chair, I'm looking at attachments, and I'm just not, there's a lot of them, but I...
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I think the PDF's name is hf32244taxes.pdf, if that's helpful. I'll hit send and send that off to you separately by your email.
Would you please? For some reason, I'm just not seeing it, and it's probably here. I apologize very much, Madam Chair.
Oh, no worries, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sirkvenek, can you just make sure that it is on the, I'm pretty sure it's on the House website too, but if other members are having trouble locating it, we can get it out to you as well. With that, thank you, Mr. Strom. And our first testifier here is the House ISD 196 Director of Operations, Mark Stotz. Mr. Stotz, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Stotz. I'm the Director of Finance and Operations for ISD 196, which covers most of Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Eagan in the South Metro area. And I'm here today to talk about particularly referendum property tax relief. You know, our district is very heavily residential. We don't have a lot of commercial industrial property relative to other districts. And therefore, it costs our taxpayers quite a bit more to raise $1 in operating levy referendum than it does in maybe our neighboring districts or other districts within the metro area. House File 3224 would increase the equalization aid. As I mentioned, we currently do not receive any equalization aid on property taxes. This would provide referendum property tax relief for the taxpayers in our district. I know we have quite a few people testifying today, so I'm going to limit my comments to that. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have, and I'll turn it over back to the Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Stotz. Our next testifier is New Ulm Superintendent Paul Betrang. Sorry, Superintendent Betrang, please state your name for the record and pronounce it correctly so we can all hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's actually Jeff Betrang, New Ulm School Superintendent. I could go by Paul, I guess, for today. Thank you, committee members. I'm Jeff Betrang, Superintendent, New Ulm Schools. Thank you for allowing me to testify on this bill today. We are a rural school district in southern Minnesota, part of Representative Torkelson's district. First of all, I want to say I support this bill for our local taxpayers in our district. Based on our analysis with our financial advisor, this bill will provide an increase in the state share of education costs for LOR and operating levies. It'll decrease local property taxes. It'll simplify the calculations of aid levy splits for all of the different referenda. It's more equitable to all schools, as Mark had just testified to. It'll take future property value growth into account. And based on our analysis for our local option revenue, the increased equalization means the local levy share drops, from 70.6% to 60.7%, which is a good reduction on the local taxpayers. For the operating referendum, the aid levy split would go from no aid in all levy to a 27.2 aid and 72.8 local levy. Again, this is huge for our local taxpayers. Both of these changes reduce the impact on local homeowners, business, and farmers. For the debt equalization, under the new formula proposed, every district's debt service would qualify for some part of equalization. And for New Ulm, we could see a reduction of over $500,000 in debt service, another gain for our local taxpayers. So taking into account that schools depend on local levies to keep programs and pay for state and federal requirements, this will help us keep and renew existing levies while seeing local property taxes reduced. And just a side light, New Ulm Schools has a $2.4 million SPED cross subsidy. If that were actually fully paid for, we wouldn't be asking for operating referendums. I would be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Superintendent Betrang. Next up, we have St. Michael Albertville Superintendent Anne-Marie Foucault. Superintendent Foucault, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Anne-Marie Foucault, and I'm the superintendent of the St. Michael Albertville School District, a district of about 6,600 students located in Wright County. I am here today to lend support of HF 3224, particularly the proposed increase in debt service equalization found in sections 1 through 3. Currently, only 25 districts with extremely high debt service loads qualify for debt service equalization. Under this proposal, over 100 districts would qualify for the program. When first implemented in 1992, this tax relief program assumed nearly 12% of total school debt service, but the program has not been significantly upgraded since its establishment, and the state now picks up just under 3%. STMA's situation is not unlike a number of low property wealth school districts. We are a growing district, and because of that, voters in the school district have had to dedicate a large portion of the local tax effort to building projects, but it just isn't growing districts that need assistance. In many districts, facilities need to be replaced to reflect changing student needs and ensuring student safety. Providing a more level playing field for taxpayers in local property wealth districts will help create a system in which all students will have greater access to high quality learning environments. Several sessions ago, legislators created the Ag Bond Credit to help reduce the burden of school debt service on owners of agricultural property. Districts throughout the state recognize how important that change was in creating tax fairness and greatly appreciate that effort. HF 3224 builds on that progress by extending similar permanent debt service tax relief for residents and small business owners in local low property wealth districts. The equalization increases in HF 3224 will provide greater tax fairness to property taxpayers in my district and many similar districts throughout the state. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting students across our great state.
Thank you, Superintendent Foucault. Next up, we have Seth Putz. Mr. Putz, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Morning, good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members from the Walleye Capital of the World. Please bear with me, the internet's a little bit spotty up here today. I just want to start out by saying I'm humbled that my voice gets to be heard again this morning or afternoon. My name is Seth Putz. I'm the Buildings, Grounds, Health, and Safety Supervisor for Lake of the Woods School District. This afternoon, I want to let you know how important it is to smaller districts like ours to increase the per student dollar amount for the LTFM. Our district of 3,771 persons. The school was built in 1992, and at that time, there was a student body of roughly 900 students, and the building is 229,000 square feet in size. Moving to the present, we currently have a student body of only 487. There has been a significant drop in the enrollment from then until now. The building has not changed, and upkeep is becoming more expensive with inflationary pressures and construction materials. An increase of $120 per student adds about $58,000 to the LTFM budget for us. This increase will help update our HVAC control system, resurface our track, which is in need of repair, among other projects on our list. It gives me hope that we can continue to maintain and upgrade the building and grounds as things fail or become obsolete. I'm glad there is a program like the LTFM that is solely dedicated to the maintenance and upkeep of the school. This program has been tremendously helpful to smaller school districts. It allows you to plan and budget for projects without its sole dedication to the facility side of the school. It'd be very difficult to find a way to finance it. Thank you for your time to hear me.
Thank you, Mr. Putz, and thank you. This is one of the nice things about having virtual meetings is to have you come and testify from Lake of the Woods and your beautiful area. I've been up there to the state park, but really appreciate hearing your voice today. Next up, we have, Dina Hagen. Ms. Hagen, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and committee members. My name is Dina Hagen, and I'm the Director of Special Education for the Northern Lights Academy, a special education school district in Cloquet. We serve students with severe behavior disorders and severe autism. So this legislation, House File 3224, is extremely important to me as a cooperative director because it would resolve the inequity between metro students attending intermediate districts and the same types of students with severe needs attending our co-op schools. Intermediates and co-ops provide many of the same services. However, intermediates have an additional $65 per pupil lease levy authority that for their facilities that co-ops do not. So the Northern Lights Co-op currently operates its program in three separate locations in the Cloquet area. We have one site in an old school basement, a church education wing, and then we are in part of a member district high school in order to serve our students from our 12 member school districts. Our services go all the way up to Silver Bay, over to McGregor, Minnesota, and down to down I-35 to Willow River and everything in between, except for Duluth Public Schools. Our districts don't have access to adequate funding to be able to buy or build a space that meets our collective needs without that $65 extra levy authority. So we really need help from our legislators to change that law to make our programs across the state equal access for both metro and outstate cooperative students. And our districts are unable to move forward with a facility project without it. We really just truly believe that our students with severe disabilities can't live or they can't learn safely in their typical schools. So we provide a school for them and they really need, good facilities like any other student. So I really thank you so much for being able to testify today and thank you for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Hagen, and thank you for the work you do with our cooperative schools. Those in our intermediate districts are so very important to reaching all of our kids. Last up, we have Brad Lindell. Mr. Lindell, please state your name for your record, the record in your organization, and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Lindell. I'm the Executive Director of Schools for Equity in Education, and I'm honored today to voice our organization's support for House File 3224, which would be a monumental step toward bringing greater and ongoing tax fairness to school districts throughout Minnesota. Addressing disparities in school funding that arise from differences in property wealth has been the primary focus of Schools for Equity in Education since the organization's inception in 1979. But as Representative Hewitt pointed out in his testimony, there is broad support for House File 3224 from a wide range of education advocacy organizations. It is clear we are not alone in supporting this effort to provide greater tax fairness for property taxpayers throughout the state of Minnesota in the funding of their schools and also providing an increase through the local option revenue category. The discussion of the interplay between the property tax system and the education funding system dates back more than 50 years when the Minnesota Miracle was passed in 1971. Progress has been made since that time to mitigate the problems caused by disparities in property wealth between school districts and how that affects educational opportunities, particularly with the establishment of the operating referendum and debt service equalization programs in 1991. But since then, progress has come in fits and starts. House File 3224 would provide a strong foundation that would both increase support in a number of school levies and preserve the property tax relief by indexing the increased equalization factors to statewide growth in property wealth. Without diving too deeply in the weeds, the equalization formulas are based on 1991 property values and have not been updated consistently since then. The equalizing factors for both tiers of the operating levy and the second tier of the local option revenue and the first tier of the debt service levy all fall short of the statewide average property wealth. Because the equalizing factors for local option revenue and operating referendum levies are not adjusted to reflect statewide property wealth growth, property tax relief for low property wealth districts erodes over time. This has resulted in many taxpayers paying significantly more for the same school levy amount compared to taxpayers in high property wealth districts. House File 3224 corrects that and makes the new property tax relief permanent. Before I wrap up, I want to stress that as much as this is an education issue, it is also a tax issue, and it has always been a tax issue. Speaking from my perspective, I believe funding for this initiative is most appropriately carried in the tax target. Minnesota's budget situation is in a strong position, providing the legislature with the opportunity to take a substantial step, a step that will last, to address the issue of how property wealth disparities affect educational opportunities. House File 3224 would go a long way toward addressing this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lindell. Members, do you have any questions for the testifiers, Representative Hewitt? Any questions about the runs or any comments?
I find that unmute button. let's go with the questions first, and then I need a copy of the runs too. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Got it. First, I'll go to Representative Marquardt.
So thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this bill forward. I mean, and I'm not going to repeat what all the testifiers said so accurately, but you know, basically on a lot of these, we've just fallen behind. I mean, in these equalizations, some of them were set and some just haven't moved. And without going into great details, it just means over time as your value may go up, as it just appreciates over time, you lose aid and your levy goes up. Now, some of them are linked now to a percentage of basically your land value per pupil, but a lot of them aren't. So updating this is really good. From another bill I had from a few years ago, I've got some data, but in 1998 and 1999, on the debt service levy, there was out of about $380 million of debt service total amount, about $335 million was levied and $38 million was aid. So about 10% of the total debt service levies, I shouldn't say levy, total amount was aid, about 10%. 20 years later, we were up to about $930 million total, and only $22 million of it was in debt service aid, which was 2.4%. So we went from 10% down to 2.4% over about that 20 years. And so I think that kind of describes the situation. But this is going to help those property poor districts be able to be more on equal ground. I mean, no matter where you're at in the state, you should be able to have the opportunity to have the same top-notch class facilities wherever you're at for your students. And so this really, Representative Hewitt, goes a long ways in creating that equalization. I do have a question, or a couple questions, though. So, Mr. Strom, you know, I'm aware of, you know, the set amounts, like on the local option revenue, it's 880,000 is the equalizing factor. But when we start getting into percentages of the statewide average tax base per pupil, what is that? And like on the local option revenue where they go to 150%, what is that equalizing factor now? Just to give some perspective on where we'd be at now.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, and members, the third column in is the referendum market value per pupil unit. And as members of this division know, there are two tax bases that school districts use, the market value tax base and then the adjusted net tax capacity tax base. On the market value tax base, you can see that the state average on the top line there in that third column is $706,000 per pupil. That's the metric of property wealth that we use for school districts, is how much referendum market value per pupil they've got. So 100% of the state average would be at that $706,000, and 150% of that would be slightly over $1 million per pupil. So by raising that first tier of local optional revenue from its $880,000, you'd be taking that up to a little over $1 million. And then the second tier of local optional revenue, which is less, which is at $510,000, that essentially would be doubling the equalizing factor for that second tier. So that by increasing those equalizing factors is how the additional equalization aid is put into the formula. And that additional equalization aid is essentially dollar for dollar offsetting the levy dollars.
Mr. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom. That's very good. Thank you. So I have one question also for Mr. Strom. On the local option revenue, the bill raises the allowance from $724 to $825 and then increases by the rate of inflation. How does that, keeping the new proposal at 150% of the statewide average, how does raising it from 724 to 825 impact the levy reduction? I mean, with that number, I presume, which I'm looking at is 82.3 million, that would go down some, I presume, if I'm calculating that right.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, yes, that's correct. The local optional revenue, by adding that additional money to the formula, gives every school district more revenue. And the equalization means that for those lower value districts, there's going to be a drop in their overall levy. For the high value districts, they're already using less effort than the lower value districts. So they may have an increase in their actual levy dollars for that increase in revenue. But their rate, as it were, for the total is still going to be less than the comparable rate or the comparable burden that a low value district is going to be facing. So, for example, the second district listed on the printout, the Minneapolis School District, that revenue increase is giving the district about $3 million more in local optional revenue and no levy relief, essentially. That's all coming in the form of levy because they're a very high referendum market value per pupil district. On the other hand, if you were to go down just a couple of districts to the Anoka-Hennepin District, District Number 11, they're going to get a revenue increase of $4.2 million on local optional revenue. But if you scroll over to the local optional revenue levy reduction category, they're going to get a reduction of $6.7 million. So they'll actually have their revenue go down after the, even after their levy go down, even after the revenue is raised, because they're relatively low value and the equalization aid is going to pick up a fair portion of their existing levy, as well as some of the new ones.
Sure. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom, for that. So just in closing, and Representative Keeler's next bill is also dealing with equalization for local option revenue and so forth, but these are good, needed changes that we have to make. And again, Representative Hewitt, Representative Keeler, thank you for bringing these bills forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't pretend that I understood everything that just happened between Representative Marquardt and Tim Strom. Rep. Marquardt used to be the chair of the Ed Finance Committee, and I find it pretty confusing. I keep my head around taxes and housing and homelessness stuff, which is hard enough for me. But that the I just want to make a general comment. You know, I appreciate this effort. I appreciate Representative Hewitt for bringing this bill forward. This is something that we need to do, as you know, Mr. Lundell, I think, said really, really well, like to address, you know, to keep our commitment to make sure that kids, the education that kids get is not dependent on how property rich their community is. But I just want to say, you know, that these efforts at equalization and efforts at kind of like, you know, making sure that property tax levies are fair to people and adequately fund our schools is sort of moving parts around on a system that is not working well broadly in a lot of ways. I mean, I am a representative from Minneapolis. My educators are on strike right now because we have education support professionals in our classrooms who are doing all kinds of work with our students every day, and they're making less money than you could make literally if you went and got a job at White Castle or at the grocery store. My district is, you know, last I heard, $59 million kind of in the red. The way that we are funding education doesn't seem to be working very well. And I know that the state contribution as a percentage of the overall spending on education has gone down over the last 20 years for sure. And of course, schools have to be funded. We have to have our kids in schools. And so what's happened is that the local elected officials have to step in and go to the property tax levy payers to make up that shortfall from us, from the state. And we, the state, under the Constitution, are responsible for ensuring that every child in Minnesota has access to an equal education. And, you know, so I guess what I want to say is, like, this is great. Also, we have a $950 million special education cross subsidy that we need to deal with. We have an English language learners cross subsidy that we need to deal with. us in this body. And when we don't do our job, then we put it on our superintendents, we put it on our local partners, and they're making things happen on a shoestring. And so we, as state representatives, as you know, as the stewards of this state budget, which is supposed to fund education, we need to step up and do our jobs and not allow, you know, cross subsidies to bring down our public education system. So again, I appreciate the work. You know, we have to do better in a broad sense in meeting our obligations to our communities on the just the basics of what our families and students need. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better than myself, and you should definitely think about Education Finance Committee next year. We have not kept pace with inflation when it comes to our per pupil formula. Definitely not. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just a quick question. I was reading through this and trying to understand it, and it's a lot of numbers if you don't deal in the education system, but it looks like we're actually just buying down the local levy. But is there anything in here then that prevents the local districts from raising the levy anyway and just having a double pot of money? Or else it's making it easier to go back and raise the levy?
Representative Hewitt or Mr. Lindell, did someone want to respond?
Yeah, I would refer to, Madam Chair, I'd refer to Mr. Lindell for that question.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, for the most part, yes, it's property tax relief, but on the voter-approved levies, voters could still go back and you know, pass levies with a stronger state commitment. I think that I look at it as kind of a purchase. There's a purchasing power aspect to this as well. As Representative Hewitt and Mark Stotz talked about in their testimony, it shouldn't take 2 to 3 times the effort for someone in one district to generate the same amount of revenue that's generated in another district. Voters are going to, there are going to be differences. I mean, just because the state is putting in a greater share doesn't mean in many instances that voters are going to approve a levy. I think that local issues and how those things play out are probably going to have a greater, have always had a great influence on whether or not levies pass. And I think that would remain the case.
Representative Green.
Thank you. I guess that answers my question. I always have a little bit of problem with some of these bills if we're not going after some of the other issues that our districts are dealing with, instead of just more and more money trying to go, because I do talk to my school districts and they have a lot more problems with regulations and stuff coming down from the state, mm-hmm. and other issues that cost them money that they have to fund. And I would sure like to see us address some of those at some time, not in this committee, of course, but down the road. We think that if we're not going to do that, we're going to pile on more money. And then if more regulations come on, we're really not going to gain too much. Right. So we're just taking tax dollars from one place and using them for tax dollars for another. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Anderson, and then we're going to move to lay it over after final comments. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this bill is long overdue. We mentioned we haven't changed these values since back in the early 1990s. And speaking from somebody in rural Minnesota, we know what's happened to land values in that time. And as those values go up, it makes the districts wealthier in terms of their tax capacity. And as a result, the equalization then went down. So I think this is a good bill. It's going to help some of our property poor districts and the rural districts as well. So I very much support this bill. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Seeing no further questions or comments, Representative Hewitt, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, you're exactly right on that. And a lot of this came from rural school districts. Representative Gomez, I hear you loud and clear. Alone on the cross subsidy, I think my district is one of the largest, like the third at least. And Representative Marquardt, you're right. It's time to change this. As Representative Anderson related, 1990 is the last time this did. A lot of great things happened in 1990, but it's time to change this formula. So thank you, Madam Chair, for the time. And I appreciate the members having a good debate. They're good thing. And thank you, Mr. Strom, for the runs, too.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. With that, I lay over House File 3224 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. I want to recognize that Representative Herr joined us during the discussion on our previous bill. Our next item on our agenda is House File 3906 of Representative Keeler's. I will move House File 3906 before the division. Representative Keeler, welcome to the committee and please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm going to kind of piggyback off what Representative Gomez said. That was a really intense conversation about taxes that I didn't understand, but I'm really interested to learn more about, hence part of why I've taken on this bill and this conversation. What we're doing with House File 3906 is it increases the equalizing factors for both the first and second tier of the local option revenue, increasing state aid. The one question I asked was what negative impacts are there, and there's no negative impacts on any of our communities. What this does is it actually supports our property poor communities, which is a community like mine in Moorhead. I think this is a good bill. We had a good conversation about it in education finance, and that's how it got here. So I don't have any testifiers. I do know that Mr. Strom is here if we have any questions regarding the runs.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. I think I'll have Mr. Strom just briefly run through the school district runs as well. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Keeler and committee members, in your packet, you've got a second printout for House File 3906. That's labeled HF3906.pdf. And what that does is one portion of the bill that you just heard is the local optional revenue. And this bill essentially changes the equalizing factors for the two tiers of that program and results in a $15 million levy reduction. It's oriented a little bit differently. And so you can see that levy reduction per pupil in the second to last column. And then to show a bit of what that would mean on a sample property, it shows the reduction of taxes that would occur on a $200,000 property, a property with a market value of $200,000. And again, it's organized in ascending district number order. And you can, the districts are ordered by pretty much by county, and you can look up and down the list. And those that are low value districts are the ones that are gonna be receiving the largest reduction. Because again, as equalization works, the whole idea of it is essentially tax-based equalization. So the lower a district's referendum market value for people, the more aid and the more levy reduction they'll get out of House File 3906.
Thank you so much, Mr. Strom. With that, members, any questions for Representative Keeler? So it's a little bit smaller version of what we just went over with just talking about the one levy instead of the other two, or instead of the three combined. I can't do math today. That's not good. Members, any questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Keeler, final word.
Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill.
Thank you. Nice and brief. With that, that's how we like it. Thank you for getting us back on track. I lay over House File 3906 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 3725. Representative Fisher, would you like to move House File 3725 before the division?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 3725.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Hewitt, welcome back. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I had to get Representative Ugamont those runs right away. He was looking for them, so sorry about that. Now I'm onto this bill. Members, House File 3725 is I'm just gonna come out and say it's a Dabney original. That's where this bill comes from, is our Chair Dabney. It's a great bill. It's actually, I got phone calls on it this week because what was delivered to our houses are our property tax statements and our slips to pay our property taxes this year. Under current Minnesota law, it allows additional property, this bill, House File 3725, under current Minnesota law, allows an additional property tax refund for homeowners whose property taxes payable increase more than 12% over a year. This refund property program is often referred to as targeting refund. To qualify for a refund, the increase in the property taxes must be greater than $100. This refund equals 60% of the amount of the increase of the property taxes in an excess of 12%. The maximum refund right now is $1,000. House File 3725 would reduce to 12% threshold to qualify for the refund to 10% and would increase the maximum refund to $2,000. This bill affects the 2022 refunds, is effective in 2022 and the refunds payable in 2023. There is a fiscal note in the package. We do have a note from AARP that supports the bill. I stand for questions and I'll answer them as best as I can. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Members, I think there's also a letter in your packet from AARP on this bill as well as the League of Minnesota Cities. Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this forward. Yeah, this certainly is kind of goes somewhat hand in hand with our homeowners property tax refund program. This is more of when kind of the one-time type of thing where maybe you had a spike in your market value or there was something that occurred within a city or a school referendum or debt service or whatever that might be that on that year, everything just jumps really up. So this is really kind of good safety valve if you want. But one thing I'm hearing right now is market values are going up and more are being pushed on homeowners. And years ago, we had something called a limited market value where your market value could only go up so much. Now, we did away with that, which was good because that ended up shifting onto other properties and so forth. And it kind of masked what was the real reality out there. So that's what I think I like about this is that it protects you somewhat against a market value increase, especially if it's only one portion of the properties getting that increase, and still allows people to kind of survive that year. And I think by lowering the 12 to 10% and increasing the amount you can get, I think are good steps that's going to help our senior citizens, but homeowners overall. So thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And I also believe that with this bill, it does not include if the increase is surely from remodeling or improving the value of your home that way, does not count towards that. But it's a really good bill for those that are experiencing those all of a sudden 1 year spikes in property taxes. So thank you, Representative Hewitt. I see no other hands. Please proceed with your final comments.
Well, thank you, members, for a great day in front of the property tax division. I appreciate your time today. I think this is a great bill, especially for our seniors. As a realtor, I cannot believe the property values and how they're going in Minnesota. I know one home that I just listed 2 years ago increased over basically a $150,000 increase. So we need to send them help. Thank you. Thanks again, Chair, for the time.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And with that, I lay over House File 3725 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. And with that, I will hand over the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Gomez.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. The next item on our agenda is House File 3518. Chair Joaquin, would you like to move your bill before the division?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 3518 before the division.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I see that you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move the amendment as well?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment. It just updates the tables with February forecast numbers.
Great. Are there any questions on the amendment? Not seeing any. If we could unmute for a moment and vote on it. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Joaquin, please explain your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing 3518 today. This bill further invests in our property tax refund program. This program provides a little support for folks earning lower wages who are on fixed incomes and struggling or struggling to afford the cost of safe housing, as well as families struggling to make ends meet. Our property tax refund program serves as a circuit breaker, a relief mechanism from the rising property taxes in our communities driven by rapidly rising market values, as Representative Marquardt mentioned and Representative Hewitt, or increased municipal levies needed to provide basic public services. House File 3518 reduces the co-pays and increases the maximum refund in a graduated way, focusing the larger increases for those making under $46,720. That, by the way, is just about the average starting teacher's salary in Minnesota. There are smaller increases in the maximum refund as you move up the income level on the chart. You will also see that when updated, the household income levels are reflective of $2020. And we smoothed out the percentage of income thresholds. The result of this investment that we would make would be an average increase of $155 for 576,200 filers, as the fiscal note says, or revenue note, and half of which are seniors. And the bill also slightly increases the number of filers by about a little over 500 who would be newly eligible for the credit. House File 3518 works well with the bills that we heard 2 weeks ago. Those were bills that made adjustments to the senior deferral program, how household income is calculated for the property tax refund program, and change senior exemption calculations. Today, we'll also be hearing a bill from Representative Hewitt that increased the targeted tax credit program, and we'll be hearing a bill from Representative Morrison that would adjust the homestead exclusion program. Taken together, these bills will provide a property tax cut for folks in all of our communities across Minnesota. Today, we'll also be hearing a bill from Representative Bonner that brings together many of these same provisions under one bill, and I would like to thank her for all the work she's done on that proposal. And a sneak preview of next week, when we will continue the work by hearing bills from Vice Chair Gomez and Representative Agbaje to tackle the renter's credit program. With that, members, there is letters of support and packets from AARP that address many of the bills that I just mentioned, a letter from the League of Minnesota Cities in support of 3518, and a letter addressing the importance of property tax refund program from a large coalition of folks the Minnesota Budget Project has brought together. These letters serve as powerful testimony and why this program is so important and deserves our investment. With me today, I also have two folks who give brief testimony, Nan Madden, the Director of Minnesota Budget Project, and Jonathan Marchand, Program Coordinator with United Community Action Partnership. With that, Madam Chair, I'll let you call in the testifiers.
Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. Ms. Madden, please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House File 3518 and want to thank Chair Joachim for bringing this bill forward to strengthen the homestead credit refund or property tax refund for homeowners. The path to a stronger, more equitable recovery is through investing in Minnesotans, their families, and their communities, focusing on those hardest hit by the pandemic and the disparities and disinvestment that preceded it. All Minnesotans want safe, affordable homes for themselves and their families, but some Minnesotans who are earning lower wages or who are on fixed incomes struggle to afford both the cost of housing and other basic necessities. Property tax refunds for homeowners and renters help bring down one of the costs of housing for workers, families, seniors, and people living with disabilities. These refunds are targeted based on income and prioritize those for whom property taxes make up a larger share of their family budgets. They are a powerful tool to put a limit on how much of a family's budget can go towards paying property taxes. I particularly want to support the components of this bill that are directed towards low and modest income Minnesotans, including providing larger refunds by lowering the copayment component of the formula, as well as the threshold changes, and increasing the maximum amount of property tax refund that Minnesotans can qualify for, which will especially help those whose property taxes are high in relation to their income. These provisions would provide a needed economic boost to many Minnesotans who have faced hardship during the pandemic and who are still struggling during this uncertain and unequal economic recovery. Their local communities will also benefit as these Minnesotans spend their property tax refunds at their local businesses. I appreciate the benefit this bill will have for lower income homeowners and look forward to talking with you more about similar expansions for the property tax refund for renters as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madden. Next, we have with us Jonathan Marchand. Mr. Marchand, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Marchand. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yep, we've got you.
All right, great, thank you. The wonders of Zoom allow us to actually spend some family travel time while we're doing this, so thank you. I am the site coordinator for United Community Action Partnership's VITA program. VITA stands for Volunteer Income Tax Assistance. And it's kind of a core example of how community action puts our communities into action, namely helping to prepare and file taxes without cost to the consumer. As the site coordinator, I am able to review and submit all of the tax returns that go through our Willmar location. I'm familiar with who qualifies for and what the property tax refund means for those families and their budgets. The typical UCAP VITA consumer has an annual income that would be under $40,000, under $60,000 for married filing jointly, and is usually a mixture of wages, sometimes Social Security, SSI, some cases a modest para retirement for some of our seniors. But more often than not, we're talking low wage earning families and fixed income. For many of the seniors that we help, the property tax refund is essential to meeting some basic needs and is often the only refund they may receive. Both Social Security incomes do not exceed $15,000 to $16,000 and are sometimes often less than $10,000. In many instances, the home that seniors may own is the only asset they have, and the cost of maintaining a home in the face of rising costs of living means that every penny counts. The property tax refund is one way that people living on a fixed income are able to keep afloat and remain in their homes. For low-income families who own their home, the property tax refund is often part of their refund picture that can be the difference between continuing to make and sustain mortgage payments or going sometimes into default. Many of the families that we see are paying upwards of 30, 32, sometimes even 35% of their incomes towards their mortgage. So as we understand, with food and other necessities, budgets can be tight every month. As you probably know, lost wages due to the COVID pandemic caused many families to deplete their emergency savings, leaving them vulnerable to small financial setbacks like a car repair or a medical bill, even a replacing a household appliance, as we heard earlier in these hearings. Increasing the property tax refund for low-income homeowners is one way to help families and seniors maintain stable housing while meeting their other basic needs and rebuilding emergency savings. Prioritizing low-income homeowners is the best way to help our communities recover from the impact of COVID. And we also support the renter's credit, which I understand we'll be discussing at a future hearing. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Marchand. We appreciate your testimony.
You bet. Thank you.
Great. Enjoy your vacation.
Thank you.
We'd also, Representative Pulowski has joined us during the last conversation. Welcome to the committee, Representative Pulowski. Next up for testifiers, we have Paul Enger. Mr. Enger, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Egger, and I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. We're a business trade association with a membership of over 21,000 real estate professionals around the state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Representative Joachim's House File 3518. And thank you, Representative Joachim, for bringing this bill forward. The Homestead Credit Refund Program simply makes housing more affordable. Saving money for a down payment and purchasing a home are just the first steps in becoming a homeowner. But to be a successful homeowner, homeowners have to plan for the expenses to maintain their property and certainly paying their property taxes. And paying property taxes can be a challenge that the PTR program provides great assistance in that case where taxes are high relative to a homeowner's income. You've spent time in the full taxes committee with the Department of Revenue's tax incident study. In the most recent tax incident study, the 2021 version, there's a sentence in there I just want to share with you about the property tax refund program. And it states, quote, the property tax refunds offset 12.8% of the residential property tax burden, and the refunds offset a much higher portion in the lowest five deciles. So that's just an indicator of really how impactful this particular program can be. And one of its strengths is that it provides policymakers in the legislature with several different options for increasing the support provided to homeowners. There's increasing the maximum refund, there's decreasing the co-payment percentage, there's lowering the threshold percentage for determining eligibility, and there's increasing the household income for eligibility. And another strength that the program provides is that because it's a statewide or a state paid refund, it does not shift property tax burden onto other property taxpayers. So thank you again, Madam Chair, for introducing the bill, and we're happy to support it today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eger. Thanks for joining us. And you're speaking our language when you quote the tax incident study and tax committee. So we're happy that people are making use of those resources. Our final testifier is Eric Bernstein. Mr. Bernstein, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Vice Chair Gomez and members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein and I am policy director at We Make Minnesota, which is a coalition of labor and community groups united in support of fiscal and budgetary policies to support a more just and equitable Minnesota. I'm really happy to be here today to testify in favor of HF 3518, which would increase the generosity of Minnesota's homestead credit refund by raising the maximum allowable refund and decreasing required copays. Although our coalition generally favors the preservation of state revenues for investment in core public services, we feel that income-tested property tax relief plays an important role in improving the overall fairness and sufficiency of Minnesota's state and local revenue system. Because property taxes are assessed based on home value rather than income, property taxes, as we've heard, can be regressive when measured as a share of income and can pose a substantial strain on household budgets. This can be exacerbated when property values rise faster than wages or when a taxing jurisdiction's net tax capacity declines and tax rates for property owners increase. Property tax refunds for homeowners are important for ensuring these costs do not become excessive. Our coalition is glad to see the expansion of this program being proposed, and we hope that property tax refunds for renters, who may also be overburdened by property taxes passed on by landlords, will receive similar treatment. In addition to helping those struggling with disproportionate property tax burdens, the homestead credit refund ameliorates geographic inequities that are created when we ask localities to raise the majority of their own revenue for basic services. Although property tax refunds do not entirely negate all property tax-related inequities, this circuit breaker is an important backstop for many lower-income homeowners and communities. By providing relief to homeowners and communities where property tax burdens tend to be higher as a share of income, the homestead credit refund partially offsets this unequal system. The key feature of the homestead refund credit refund is that it provides state-funded relief to replace a taxpayer's payments rather than simply forgiving property tax liabilities, which would only shift costs onto other property owners. State revenues come from more progressive sources than local revenues, so property tax refunds are an important mechanism through which the state can both increase overall progressivity and support the funding needs of localities that receive generally insufficient public funding from the state. Expanding this program will strengthen communities in every corner of the state and everywhere in between. We are happy to support this wise use of state revenue, and we hope that the committee will continue to favorably consider other measures that extend the state's fiscal capacity to localities that often struggle to fund the basic public service needs of their communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bernstein. Looking for member questions or comments for the chair or for the testifiers. Just give a moment, but I'm not seeing any so far. All right. Chair Joachim, did you have any closing comments for us?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank you to the testifiers today. Thank you for your time and attention, members. And as you've heard in the testimony, I've read in supporting documents, the property tax refund program or the homestead credit program is an important investment that we make in all of our communities. It's a part of a larger package of investments that will reach every corner of the state. I know that many of you have had emails from constituents asking for just a little bit of help with their property taxes. It may be from a young professional just starting out in a workforce or a family who is trying to make ends meet with rising childcare costs or school loans. The email may be from someone who is trying to downsize and facing a crazy housing market or a senior trying to age in place. This bill is a good place to start, and I ask for your support.
Wonderful. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I lay over House File 3518 for possible inclusion in our Property Tax Division report and return the gavel to our chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gomez. The next item on our agenda is House File 3866. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move House File 3866 before the division?
Madam Chair, I'll move 3866.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Bonner, welcome to the Tax Committee. I see that you have an A1 amendment. I'll move the A1 amendment. Could you please briefly explain your A1 amendment?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment is primarily technical in nature. It does not make any substantive changes to the bill, but rather the amendment updates the PTR algorithm table to use the February forecast numbers rather than the November forecast numbers, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, please unmute. We'll take a voice vote. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Bonner, please present your bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill before you is the result of about 4 years of refinement. Upon my arrival here in the legislature, I brought with me the concerns that I heard at the doors in my community. While Maple Grove and Osseo are thriving communities like many of ours, I heard from many of my elders a concern around spending the golden years in their homes where they raised their families. And I heard from young families that moved to our community for the good schools, parks, trails, and green spaces where kids could be kids. But with a hot real estate market, rising home values, and increased property assessments, many of these young families, seniors, or those living with disabilities expressed concerns around the total cost of ownership and increased property taxes stretching their budget to the max. City Council members have also shared with me increasing numbers of residents with these concerns as well. The bill before you has three main goals: to help our seniors age in place, allowing them to enjoy their golden years and spend their time taking grandchildren for ice cream, not having to worry about juggling fixed income, increased drug prices, and increasing costs to stay in their home. The second goal was to help those struggling with the expenses that come from an ever-growing young family whose budget may be stretched to the brink. And lastly, to help those with disabilities to stay in their home where they feel stable and independent. In a nutshell, the bill does this. It increases the maximum homeowner refund by $500 for all existing recipients of the credit. Secondly, it increases the income cap from $125,290 to $155,000, making more families eligible for the refund while providing the greatest relief to those on the lower end of the spectrum, primarily our seniors, those with disabilities, and young families. It does this by slightly increasing the income thresholds for the newly eligible income ranges and gradually reduces the maximum refund, lowering the risk of any potential cliff to the PTR program. And lastly, it increases the dependent exemption amount for senior claimants and claimants with disabilities. Under current law, the dependent exemption amount for 2022 refunds, which are payable in 2023, is around $4,450. With the attached bill language, the exemption would increase by 1.5 times the current exemption amount, which would increase to $6,675 for the 22 refund. In your packets, you, of course, have multiple letters of support from folks like the League of Minnesota, as well as the summary analysis from the Minnesota Department of Revenue on the bill. I do not have any testifiers with me today, as you've heard from many of the same folks on the previous bill, but we do have folks here in the audience that can certainly speak to the bill if there are questions, and staff available for logistical questions. Members, with that, I ask your support.
Thank you, Representative Bonner, and thank you for your work on this. Members, any questions? Seeing none, Representative Bonner, closing comments.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you, members. As mentioned before, this bill does combine a few elements together, such as the bill you may have heard from Representative Walgamont earlier, that last piece for seniors and those with disabilities. It really aims to make sure that folks can enjoy their golden years, to age in place, to help those struggling families, and of course, those with disabilities who really want to remain independent. And those were sort of the primary focuses of the bill itself today. And I know that it is something that is extremely important in my community. I have heard that time and time again, as I'm sure many of you have as well. So I thank you for your time and attention today, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you so much, Representative Bonner. With that, I lay over House File 3866 as amended for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. The next and last item on our agenda is House File 3629. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move House File 3629 before the division?
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 3629 for the division.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Morrison, welcome to the committee and please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 3629, a bill to modify the homestead market value exclusion. The bill would increase the homestead market value exclusion for most homesteads. Under current law, the homestead market value exclusion reduces the taxable market value for all homesteads valued below $413,800. The exclusion is 40% of the first $76,000 of market value, yielding a maximum exclusion of $30,400. For homestead values between $76,000 and $413,800, the exclusion is $30,400 minus 9% of the value over $76,000. Homesteads valued at $413,800 or more do not receive the exclusion. This proposal would increase the homestead market value exclusion for most homesteads. The exclusion would yield 40% of the first $80,300 of market value, yielding a maximum exclusion of $32,120. For homesteads valued between $80,300 and $413,100, the exclusion would be $32,120 minus 9% of the value over $80,300. Homesteads valued at $437,100 or more would not receive the exclusion. In other words, all homesteads over $76,000 and less than $413,800 of market value would receive an increased homestead market value exclusion. This represents 95% of homesteads that currently receive the exclusion. An additional 37,000 homesteads would qualify for the homestead market exclusion under the proposal due to the increase in maximum qualifying market value. The policy rationale for this proposal is that the values set in statute for this exclusion are not tied to inflation or tied to home values, so it keeps the original intent of the law in place. Thank you for considering House File 3629.
Thank you, Representative Morrison, and thank you for bringing this forward. This is very similar to what we were talking about with the school equalization, where values in the formula hadn't been changed for quite a long time and needed some updating. And you'll see that with some of the other bills going forward as well. With that, members, do you have any questions? Representative Hertaus.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Morrison for attempting to make housing a little more affordable. Unfortunately, this is kind of exacerbating the spread between the haves and have-nots by making it more difficult, particularly in the district that the former representative represented out in Maple Grove, and the developing fringe of the Twin City area basically shifts the property tax burden onto those new homes because, as I mentioned in my soliloquy yesterday, being out on the developing fringe, the cost of housing is quite expensive. And so qualifying for these homes makes it even more difficult. I would also like to remind members that unlike the exclusion on the commercial property tax, that exclusion was fully captured by reducing the levy and paid from the levy. But this, in this instance where you're increasing the exclusion, it's shifting it to other types of properties and property classes. So although I know the intention is good and well-spirited, it creates and exacerbates some of the problems that we try to avoid in the Property Tax Committee, and that is shifting of tax burden from one class to another. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
So, well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Morrison, thanks for bringing this forward. It is kind of a small step, but it does seem to make a lot of sense. You know, back in 2011, when this got set in, this market value exclusion, that 76 or that 30,400 exemption at 76,000 value hasn't moved, you know, in 11 years. So this at least makes a motion, moves in the right direction, and at least is moving in the right direction on property tax relief. So thank you for bringing this forward. And Chair Joaquin, you're living up to your division's name, property tax. Your property tax cut here, property tax cut there, all over the place. And I know on Friday it's going to be the same thing. So thank you for making this a big, big priority in this division, is to cut property taxes, because that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing market values go up. I'm hearing property taxes go up. I think we see the data on what's come out with the, you know, certified levies for this last year. Property taxes are going up, and it hits a lot of folks on fixed incomes. It hits lower to middle income folks. It's regressive. And, you know, regardless of your income, you know, if you lost a spouse or a spouse lost a job or something, you still have that home, and you still have those property taxes, even though your income has changed dramatically. So anything we can do to cut property taxes is a good thing. So thanks to all the authors who brought bills forward, and thank you, Madam Chair, for emphasizing property tax cuts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt. Any other further comments? I will just add to mine too that this bill helps with the front end of this issue that we're seeing with rising market values and having people need to access property tax refunds. So all it does is adjust the rates to what we're seeing in the market right now. It might have a little shift, and you see in the, there's a simulation run that's in your packet as well. I would suggest printing it out double-sided. I wish I would have been in the office to do that, but it is a very small shift on other properties. Then you also remember this is part of a package. So we're also looking at property tax refunds on the other end, targeted tax refunds. So they all kind of hold together. So with that, Representative Morrison, any further comments?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly couldn't have said it better than Chair Marquardt. I appreciate the committee's consideration of including this bill.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. With that, I will lay over House File 3629 for possible inclusion in a property tax division report. Thank you, members, for your work today. As you've heard, we'll be meeting again this Friday from 8:30 a.m. to noon, and we'll be taking a short 10-minute break within that time frame as well. The agenda has been posted for a while, and members, does anybody have any questions? Seeing none, with that, members, we are adjourned.